Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Cat lovers and feline friends, it's time for Adele Park's Quirky Catnips.
Today on Quirky Catnips, we're airing a chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park. This frightfully funny tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Find out what happens when Skitters goes cattywampus for a kitten named Harriet. Tune in each week to hear a new chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat, only on Pet Life Radio. Meow, kitties!
Audio Recording St. George presents Quirky Cat Goes Splat. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park. Narrated by a full cast.
Splat!
Meow, bitches.
Twisted Tales by Skitters the Cat. Part 4.
Why do cats scratch everything from the drapes to annoying humans? For the same reason dogs lick their balls. It's tremendous fun. My first handler, Nancy Neptune, is the only human I've met who approved of full-throttle kitty scratching. This was primarily because I'd claw the living hell out of any suitor dumb enough to try to sleep in our bed once his business was concluded with Neptune. She didn't care for overnight guests, neither did I. I won't go into how cringeworthy human sexuality is, especially when Neptune is one of the participating parties. Suffice to say, I made myself scarce during such interludes, surfacing only at the precise moment when Neptune wanted her partner gone. She'd signal the proceedings were over by loudly slamming a drawer, knowing this sound triggers post-traumatic stress symptoms, harkening back to the time she ran over my paw. Right on cue, I'd rip across whoever was unfortunate enough to be in our bed, nails fully extended. It worked like a charm every time. As a way to thank me for my services, Neptune allowed me to scratch anything in sight as long as it wasn't the leather seats in her car. I think that's the only thing she ever owned during the 9 months we lived together. As such, I happily dug into everything that suited my fancy, including all the railings and posts at Legacy Grove, the exquisite spot not too far from Gecko's Gulch where we once lived. My new humans are sticklers when it comes to scratching, so whenever I feel the need to make my mark on the world now, I find something outside to work on. I've come to terms with these new rules, but I take extreme umbrage with those who scoff at the nail artistry I performed at Legacy Grove. When the house was presented to my arch-nemesis, Blue McKenna, she launched a full-scale effort to eradicate all traces of the time I spent there. I retaliated by licking Blue's hairbrush. I swallow gobs of hair every day, so it was no fur off my back. I moved on to strategically placing a semi-live tarantula near Blue's bed, knowing she'd step right on it while making one of her numerous nightly bathroom runs. My God, this woman pees a lot. Blue should look into wearing one of those adult diapers.
Chapter 4. Blue McKenna.
When Scotty's ex-wife, Colette, figured out she couldn't ruin Brandon's summer, she decided to try and wreck mine, or at least the first part of it anyway. I'd been looking forward to having Lexi stay with us at Gecko's Gulch for a couple of weeks before she went to L.A. My twin nieces think Lexi is better than cartoons and cupcakes, all rolled into one, so they were excited about her visit. Colette started working over Lexi the second school let out. We were in the car headed for Gecko's Gulch when the barrage of guilt-laden text messages began. By the sixth night, Lexi caved in and asked to leave early. The twins were devastated. As a way of making up, Colette concocted a plan for the twins to get together with Lexi when they visited California next month. Always the big shot, Colette arranged this whole thing with my sister Moon, not bothering to fill me in. Moon will be there, so I won't have to worry about the safety of the twins. Colette isn't exactly mommy dearest, but you wouldn't want to leave her alone with anyone under the age of 18. I've done my best to get along with Colette, even though she acts like a human grease trap. She wallows in the most bottom feeder situations imaginable. I'm willing to tolerate Colette's gunky ways because I love the Spinkle kids. I even invited Colette to our wedding, although it privately irked me to no end, especially when Colette RSVP'd that she'd be attending. Scotty bet she wouldn't come, claiming Colette was too cheap to shell out for a plane ticket. He won, but lost the wager about his old girlfriend, Nancy Neptune. Of course, Neptune didn't bother to let us know she was coming. She just showed up in Naval, Utah. She lives in New York City, for hell's sake. Because of the distance, you'd think Neptune would be easy to avoid. Social media and Skype keep her tethered to my small circle of friends, enabling her to surface at the most unfortunate times. I have to admit, Neptune really wasn't much of a problem at the wedding. I didn't notice Neptune until the reception, and even then she spent most of her time hanging out with her scrappy cat, Skitters. Before moving to New York, Neptune had the nerve to act like she was doing my twin nieces a favor by dumping Skitters off at Gecko's Gulch. Just like Neptune, Skitters has this aggravating habit of making himself part of every gathering, whether others want him there or not. Skitters jumps in whatever vehicle is heading out, and no one challenges him, except me. I refuse to let this strung-out sack of stripes ride in my car. I don't know if Neptune was invited to the surprise engagement party Scotty threw in my honor, but I dodged a bullet by her not being there. The ballroom at Diamonds in the Desert was packed with people. I've never loved anyone as much as I do Scotty, but sometimes he gets a little carried away. Scotty is the only groom I know who was more enthusiastic about his wedding than the bride. It was kind of cute in some ways. It could also be level 4 annoying. We went round and round about the details. In the end, I was able to convince Scotty that we should have the kind of wedding that brought our family together, not put us on display. My idea was to exchange our vows on the front porch of the house at Legacy Grove. During the 6 years I had lived there, I fantasized about spring nuptials with a make-believe groom. I got to experience the dream vicariously when one of my best friends, Nadine Reinhardt McElprang Stratton Viapondo Davenport Milner, had one of her many weddings in the orchard at Legacy Grove. Scotty didn't want to wait until spring, so he devoted his weekends to cleaning up the site in preparation of a December 28th wedding. Recruiting Brandon, Taj, and Tom Wakefield wound up being a really good idea. They got the job done and even had some fun. I agreed with Scotty's idea to invite all our guests to the rehearsal dinner since everyone had to travel to our wedding. We reserved the entire hotel in Naval and rented a fleet of limos and vans. The courtyard at Gecko's Gulch was turned into party central. The night before the wedding, we had a chili cook-off with guests competing to win a golden ladle, which Lexi and the twins had bedazzled with about 100 pounds of craft materials. Since our wedding was just a few days after Christmas, we filled the courtyard at Gecko's Gulch with potted evergreen trees. It smelled so green and heavenly. Lexi and the twins decorated the trees with white lights and sparkly gold ornaments. They had made a lot of them during the weekends the guys were cleaning up the wedding site. Gecko's Gulch is plunked down in the middle of the desert, but it can get chilly during the winter, especially in the evening. To keep our guests from going into thermal shock, heaters were scattered throughout the courtyard. By the time the dancing started each night, the partygoers had warmed the place up to the point where we actually had to turn them off. Scotty is kind of a glitz junkie, especially when it comes to any sort of production involving an audience. He couldn't resist secretly renting a carriage with four white horses to take me and the girls to the wedding. Lexi and the twins squealed out loud when they saw it. I had originally planned to ride over in one of the limos, but the carriage was so much better. Traveling to Legacy Grove, I felt like a princess in my ivory wedding dress and floral head wreath. For the wedding reception, Scotty wanted a decadent dinner with king crab and Kobe beef. Sorry, pal, not gonna happen. I wasn't just marrying Scotty, I was marrying his kids, too. It only seemed right to host the kind of party they would like, so I went for roast beef sliders, miniature tacos, and homemade corn dogs. The pumpkin spice cake for dessert was exceptional. It didn't look like a traditional wedding cake, but it was totally delish. It might have seemed like paltry fare for an event that was going to mark the rest of my life, but everyone who came to the wedding raved about the food. Even the unexpected appearance by Nancy Neptune failed to poop this party. I moved into Scotty's house after our honeymoon. It seemed as if all my dreams were finally coming true. I was honored to be living as a family with Scotty's kids. I'd grown close to Scotty's mom and dad as well. We had a nice set of friends to boot, including Taj's parents, Dana and Tom Wakefield.
Hang tight, kiddies. We'll be back in a scratch. What's more quirky than cannabis? A reality TV show where everyone is half-baked. Quirky Cannabis Country by Adele Park is a trip you'll never forget. Get Quirky Cannabis Country today on Audible.com. Quirky Cannabis Country. Snag your copy before the whole place goes up in smoke. We now return to more of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park on Pet Life Radio.
Things were going so well. I wasn't surprised when Colette tried to strangle the happily ever after out of me. I was shocked, however, when Dana helped out. She didn't mean to, of course, but confessing to an affair made everything awkward. I promised Dana I wouldn't share her secret, but it felt like a layer of pond scum covering my soul to be hiding something from Scotty. Scotty didn't want to live together until we were married, resulting in us spending a lot of weekends away from the kids. Usually, we stayed in the suite I was using at Diamonds in the Desert Casino. Scotty was unwilling to let his parents know how many weekends we squirreled away, as if they couldn't figure out what was going on. To promote this illusion, we had the Wakefields and Taj's caregiver, Mrs. McMurdy, watch the kids. For this reason, I felt deeply indebted to Dana. I also enjoyed her company, as did my twin sister, Moon. I don't know why, but whenever I find a new friend, Moon has this exasperating way of commandeering their attention. For example, she hired my friend Nadine to work as her business manager and even moved her into Gecko's Gulch when things went sour for her in Naval. Nadine has since remarried and moved up north. Now Moon stays in touch with her more than I do. Dana and Moon clicked from the instant they met. They have a lot in common. Moon is too busy to eat more than a few bites, and Dana apparently doesn't like food at all. Both women spend an extraordinary amount of time self-primping. I usually don't put any gook on my face, and I relish dinner time, especially if Taj is cooking. It really pickles Moon that I can devour pretty much anything I want and never gain weight. One thing killing me was sitting on the knowledge that Dana was going to ask Tom for a divorce during their safari this summer. I'm not sure why she couldn't have shared this news while the Wakefields were still in the U.S. Tom, meanwhile, had been billing their Africa trip as a way to reconnect as a couple. I felt rotten knowing the only person Dana really wanted to connect with is the owner of Perspectives magazine. Besides her job with the airlines, Dana works as a freelance photographer. By her own admission, Dana is collecting a lot more than a paycheck from her boss. The call about the Wakefields' divorce came exactly 2 weeks after they left on safari. Unbeknownst to all, they had returned to the U.S. a few days ahead of schedule. Dana had collapsed during the trip because of malnutrition and dehydration. I was relieved to learn Dana agreed to enter an intensive rehab program for anorexia. Dana didn't use that word, but at least she was finally dealing with the issue. Taj burst into tears after hearing the news. This was followed by seething anger directed at his father. I was confused by Taj's reaction. Tom wasn't the one who was cheating. There was no mention of extramarital affairs, but Taj seemed to think otherwise. To make matters worse, Dana was being treated in New York. She could have easily found a rehab center in Las Vegas, so I had my suspicions about her future. Tom was going to remain with Dana for a few days and then come to Gecko's Gulch to help Taj process this sad new reality. Regardless of what happens with Dana, I'm hoping Taj will find enough to do at Gecko's Gulch to keep him happily distracted this summer. He's already contacted Nadine about getting some part-time work at a Taste of Heaven bakery in Naval. Taj got interested in baking when Nadine let him work on the pumpkin spice cake for my wedding. Nadine used to be part owner of the bakery. Her sister wives from a polygamous marriage bought her shares and continued to run the place. These women had all married a mentally challenged man as a way to rescue him from an abusive situation in Zion Flats. Selfish as it may be, I'm thrilled that Taj is seeking a higher education in the goody department. My idea of a well-balanced diet is holding a donut in each hand. I used to rely on Nadine for my sugar fix, but she crossed over to the dietary dark side following a health scare. Vowing to end what she calls diabetic food trafficking, everything Nadine serves now looks like a pile of coagulating compost. She agreed to make the pumpkin spice cake for my wedding, but warned it would be the last time she would, quote, endanger the health of a loving friend. Oh, go ahead. None of my other bad habits have killed me yet, so a few sugar bombs aren't gonna hurt. Taj seemed glad to take the recipe off Nadine's hands. He really perked up when he landed a part-time job at a Taste of Heaven bakery. Even Brandon did what he could to help out. Brandon can be sulky and snide on the best of days, but he's fiercely loyal when it comes to Taj. I'm flattered that Brandon also seems to think highly of me. Unfortunately, there are some things in my past I really don't want him to uncover. Not that I'm especially ashamed of anything. It's just that Brandon has this unfounded notion that I am the one person who has been completely honest with him. True, I have never told an outright lie, but I have been dishonest through omission, over and over again. For example, I used to be a chronic marijuana user. I was so into it. I had a massive ganja garden in the basement of the house at Legacy Grove and a second patch in the oasis near Gecko's Gulch. I cleared out both spots when I quit smoking weed a few years ago, although I still have to eradicate the occasional pot plant that crops up from time to time in the oasis. After I sold my house at Legacy Grove and moved to Colorado, I briefly owned a medical marijuana dispensary in Boulder with my former boyfriend, Stephen Finch. I was weed-free by then, which made it a strange business to operate. I don't like being cagey about this pot thing with Scotty's kids, but there never seems to be a good time to bring the subject up. I wouldn't even know where to start. Listen, kids, you really need to stay off drugs. Take it from someone who spent 10 years in a half-baked stupor and was known around Boulder as the Queen of Green. I tell myself that it's okay not to have this conversation because my hotbox days ended long before I started dating Scotty. Brandon would probably be okay with my weedy past, but he'd go mental over the secret I'm hoarding about his biological father. Technically, it isn't my information to share. All the same, I hope Brandon never finds out I knew and didn't tell him. No one can blame Brandon for being hypersensitive about disingenuous adults. In his life, they're like a contagious disease. Ironically, Brandon winds up telling me lots of things he would never share with either of his parents. He calls me a straight shooter, something that makes me cringe with guilt. I think that's why I gave Brandon a pass when he started digging into some sensitive local history. I brushed off an uneasy sensation, thankful that Brandon started work on his American Studies paper without me having to nag him. Brandon is displaying a very unwise amount of interest in the polygamists from Zion Flats, especially the ones who work at Gecko's Gulch. Their prophet, Nephi Stratton, has his sister, Orinda, lurking around Gecko's Gulch like some kind of hideous elf on the shelf. These people literally do have skeletons in the closet, or wherever it is they bury their undesirables. Nephi has a true love-hate relationship with my twin sister, Moon. He loves the tax-free cash Moon pays the workers at Good Karma. He hates the friendships Moon has formed with these religious concubines. Why? Because Moon does things on the sly to help them. Isla Ray Stratton is one such example. Moon did everything short of a PowerPoint presentation to show Isla Ray how to cut and run. There's other things, too, which are a little less obvious. Moon finds ways for polygamous mothers to communicate with teenage sons who have been ousted. A shocking number of young kids have been tossed out like the trash so the older men in Zion Flats can have multiple wives. Having Orinda on the scene has put a damper on a lot of this communication. Moon says the other women are afraid of her. As well they should be. Rumor has it that Orinda murdered her husband and her sister wife. Based on the way she treats her stepchild, Evangeline, I'd say she'd like to kill her too. Somehow, Nephi convinced a mobster named Nicholas DeLuca to marry Orinda. Later, DeLuca got a second wife, Rebecca Barlow. They all lived together at Juniper Hollow till one night DeLuca disappeared. The cops found his blood splattered all over the kitchen at Juniper Hollow. They never found his body. To this day, Orinda claims DeLuca up and abandoned his wives. He was already on the run from the law, so who knows? Realizing her husband was gone, Rebecca supposedly ingested a large amount of a hallucinogenic strain of belladonna. Orinda says Rebecca thought she could fly, so she jumped from the widow's walk on top of the house at Juniper Hollow. No one will ever know for sure, because Orinda conveniently tampered with the evidence. Brandon has developed a bit of an obsession with this sordid tale. So far, most of his research consists of reading stories in the online version of the Naval Weekly Banner. I keep telling myself it's silly to think any harm can come from Brandon's work on a high school writing assignment.
What happens when cosmetics and polygamy collide?
find out in Quirky Killers by Adele Park. Take a trip to quirky polygamist country, where one of the local brides is just itching to get her husbands to heaven in a hurry. Quirky Killers. Get it today on audible.com. You'll die laughing.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.